Have you ever been there? You know, like Carrie in college, putting in all the study time, maybe burning the midnight oil, but the grades just aren't showing up.
Yeah, it happens. High school might have felt easier, right? Kater barely had to study them.
Exactly. But college, well, that hit different. Suddenly she's rereading stuff, notes are piling up, the material feels like a foreign language.
And those old habits, they just stopped working.
Totally. So today we're doing a deep dive, pulling back the curtain on something we use all the time but maybe don't fully get: how memory actually works.
Right. And we'll look at study strategies that go way beyond just, grabbing a highlighter.
We want to arm you with tools to handle that test anxiety too. The real goal here is turning effort into knowledge that sticks, real learning.
And we've really dug into the research for this. We're pulling from memory experts, researchers, and even student experiences, like you see in the Chapter 6 survey and profiles like Lily Brandstetter's.
So it's not just what to do.
No, it's why it works. It's about understanding your own brain, really, and making learning work better for you.
Okay, let's get into it then. Memory. It seems so. Mysterious sometimes, doesn't it?
It does. But there's actually a pretty clear process behind it. Think of it in three basic steps when you remember something.
Okay, three steps.
First is encoding. That's how you first take information in, through your senses, the smell of a flower, or
Oh,
maybe.
the smell of the trash bin you forgot to take out.
Yeah, exactly. Your brain puts a label on that initially in short-term memory. Then, if it's important, especially if you encounter it a lot, comes storage.
Saving it for later.
Right, and the final step is retrieval. That's when you actually pull that information back out to use it. That's remembering.
Gotcha. Encoding, storage, retrieval. Simple enough.
But within that, your brain has different kinds of memory systems. You've got working memory, which is like your active mental workspace.
For tasks right now.
Exactly. Like Marilyn, the nursing student, recalling chemical reactions for a case study, or just remembering a quick change your professor mentioned for an assignment.
Okay, so working memory is for the now. What else?
Then there's short-term memory, handy for temporary stuff like where you left your keys or maybe an annoying ad jingle.
Ah, the jingles. They stick too well sometimes.
Right. But short-term memory is famously limited. There was this psychologist, George Miller, back in 56.
Oh, the magical number seven thing.
That's the one. He found we can usually hold only about 5 to 9 pieces of information there. 7 ± 2.
5 to 9. That feels really small considering everything we deal with. How do we even function?
Well, that's the clever part. Our brains have a workaround. It's a strategy called chunking.
Chunking. Like breaking big things into smaller bits.
Sort of the opposite, actually, grouping smaller bits into larger, meaningful chunks. So instead of remembering 20 random shopping
We
items,
group them like dairy, produce, snacks.
exactly. Kitchen items, things for the kids, stuff for your desk. You remember maybe 5 categories, but that helps you recall all 20 items. It stretches that short-term limit.
Okay, that makes sense. Chunking. So that helps short-term memory. But what about the really important stuff, the things we need to know long-term?
Ah, now we're talking long-term memory. That's the brain's huge archive. Childhood smells, how to ride a bike, complex
The
concepts.
stuff that really sticks.
Right, but getting information from short-term to long-term, that takes actual work. It's not automatic.
So just seeing something once isn't enough.
Usually not. It often takes frequent exposure over time, think multiplication tables or spelling rules, and something called relevant manipulation.
Manipulating it, like playing with the idea.
Kind of connecting it to what you already know, thinking about it in different ways. And this is where things get really interesting at the brain level.
So.
Well, research, like Allison Preston's work, shows that converting memories to long-term storage actually changes your brain physically.
Like rewiring.
Exactly. Neurons change, connections between them, synapses get stronger. It's like carving a path. The hippocampus helps combine information initially. But eventually, the neocortex lets you access it directly.
Wow. So making study sessions more memorable, maybe more emotional, could actually help.
It absolutely could. It helps build those stronger pathways, making retrieval easier down the road.
Okay, so our brains can store things long term, but it takes effort in the right conditions. So why do we still forget things so easily sometimes? What gets in the way?
Roadblocks. Yeah, there are some big ones that really sabotage our efforts. The sources point to two major culprits students often face.
Let me guess. Lack of sleep.
Bingo. Lack of sleep is huge. We all know it makes us feel groggy, but the impact on learning is, well, It's pretty severe.
How severe?
Some research, like that UCLA study, claims being sleep-deprived can impair your judgment and focus as much as being drunk.
Wow. That's bad.
It is. Sleep isn't just downtime. Your brain is actively consolidating memories then, processing information, cleaning house, essentially.
Yeah.
Without enough sleep, it just can't do that job properly. Think of an overworked computer, slow, sluggish, maybe crashes.
Versus a refreshed brain that's ready to make connections.
Precisely. The American Academy of Sleep Medicine has tons of research on this. Sleep is critical for learning.
Okay, so sleep is non-negotiable. What's the other big roadblock?
The classic all-nighter fuel. Cramming.
Yes. Shelley's story. Putting it off, planning a late night session, falling asleep on your notes. Been there.
We probably all have. But the science is clear. Cramming just doesn't work for real learning.
Why not, though? It feels like you're forcing the information in.
But your brain resists. Dr. Susan Redline points out that sleep deficiency, which cramming causes, messes with everything, mood, memory, learning, even metabolism.
So it's not just about being tired for the test.
No. Cramming causes stress, which triggers test anxiety. It gives you only minimal exposure to the material, and it just plain overloads your brain. Remember that 10-minute rule from neuroscientist John Medina?
Yeah, the brain gets bored easily.
Right. It needs new input, variety. Long, monotonous cram sessions are basically guaranteed to make your brain tune out. It's just not effective for building those long-term pathways we talked about.
So what this all boils down to, really, effective learning isn't easy.
Not at all. The authors of Make It Stick put it bluntly. Studying is hard work. There are no shortcuts. Trying to rush it often backfires.
True learning needs effort, pushing yourself.
Exactly. Continuous effort.
Okay, so if cramming is out, and just highlighting isn't enough. That's myth hashtag two, right? Highlighting alone doesn't cut it.
Right. It's maybe a first step, but not the whole journey.
Yeah.
So what does work? Our sources highlight three really effective strategies. Game changers, really.
Let's hear them. Strategy one.
Spacing. This is about when you study. Instead of one massive session.
You spread it out.
Exactly. Spread study sessions over days, even weeks. Like an hour Sunday, 30 minutes Monday, an hour Tuesday, 90 minutes Thursday for that sociology exam instead of 4 hours straight the night before.
Okay, but doesn't that mean you might forget stuff in between?
Yes, and that's actually the point. Sounds weird, but that little bit of forgetting is good.
How is forgetting good?
Because when you have to work a little harder to recall or relearn something later, it strengthens the memory trace much more effectively than just reviewing it immediately. That effortful retrieval makes it stick long term. Productive forgetting, you could call it.
Productive forgetting. I like that.
Yeah.
Okay, so spacing is about when. What's strategy number two?
Number two is interleaving. This is about what you study within a session.
So mixing things up.
Precisely. Instead of drilling just chapter one for hours, then just chapter two, you mix different topics or types of problems within one study block.
Like read some chapter one, do a quiz on it, maybe reorganize notes for chapter two, then read some chapter three.
Yes, or mixing different types of math problems instead of doing 20 of the same kind. It forces your brain to constantly switch gears to figure out which concept or method applies. That struggle helps differentiate ideas and leads to deeper learning.
Okay, spacing and interleaving. Makes sense. What's the third big one?
The third, and maybe the most powerful, is practice testing. This is about how you study, basically testing yourself.
Like quizzing yourself.
Yes. Two main ways. One is super simple. As you read, pause, cover the text, ask what's the main idea. Say it or write it, then check.
Active recall right there.
Exactly. The other way is creating your own test, flashcards work, using tools like Quizlet, or even making a full practice exam based on your notes or past quizzes.
And I heard teaching someone else is really effective too. Is that related?
Absolutely. Teaching is a fantastic form of practice testing. It forces you to retrieve the information, organize it, explain it clearly. You have to really know it to teach it.
Makes sense. So spacing, interleaving, practice testing, those are the big three. Are there other helpful ones mentioned?
Definitely. Things like mnemonics memory aids, like NewWS for compass points or FACEGBDF for music notes. Great for quick recall of facts.
Right. Handy shortcuts.
And concept association, linking new info to what you already know, like connecting details in MLK's letter to historical context you've learned. Just be careful not to fall down rabbit holes and forget your main goal.
Good point. Stay focused.
And idea clusters are useful, too. Grouping related concepts visually, like different knitting stitches, types of aviation jobs, or uses of analytics in sports, it helps organize complex info.
Okay, lots of tools there. What about those other myths? We covered highlighting. What else should we be wary of?
Well, myth hashtag one, multitasking while studying, big myth.
Right. You can walk and chew gum, but not really learn complex stuff while texting or watching TV.
Exactly. Your brain isn't truly doing both. It's switching back and forth rapidly, which is inefficient and hurts learning. And myth hashtag three, that effective studying should feel easy or effortless.
Yeah, we touched on that. It takes work.
It really does, like an athlete training. It takes effort. Sometimes it's a grind, but that's what leads to real improvement and mastery. It's not supposed to be effortless.
This connects back to adapting how you learn too, doesn't it? Like the bicycle analogy, you learn by doing.
Totally. You need to adapt. If you're a visual learner, but the lecture's all auditory, you might need to draw diagrams. If you learn math best hands-on, just watching videos won't cut it. You got to work the problems.
It's like Dr. Stephen Covey's idea of sharpening the saw. You need to work on all your learning skills, not just rely on your preferred style.
Well said. Be flexible and build a full toolkit.
So all this great studying prepares you, but then comes the test itself. And stress is often part of that picture.
It definitely is. And a little bit of stress, that slight edge, can actually be good. It can focus you.
But too much is obviously bad.
Right. Too much becomes anxiety, and that undermines performance. One way to manage that is bridging the gap between preparation and the test itself.
How do you mean?
By practicing under test-like conditions, include timed writing or problem-solving in your study sessions, like Stuart preparing for history essays. It builds confidence because you've simulated the pressure.
Makes sense. Familiarity reduces anxiety. Mm-hmm. And the sources mentioned peppermint.
Yeah, a quirky one. Some research suggests peppermint scent might boost memory and focus. Can't hurt to try, right? But it won't replace solid studying.
Of course not. We also need that whole person approach, like Neela in nursing school.
Yeah.
Academics aren't everything.
Exactly. Ignoring your health, family, work, it's not sustainable. It backfires. Taking care of yourself, managing your whole life, actually supports your academic performance.
And setting realistic expectations is part of that too.
Absolutely. Don't expect an A if you haven't put in A-level preparation, right? Aim for continuous improvement, not instant perfection. That avoids frustration.
And knowing about accommodations if you need them.
Crucial. It's your responsibility to communicate with instructors and support services if you need accommodations. Don't wait.
Good advice. So leading up to the test, treat it like a marathon, not a sprint.
Yes. Use your time wisely. Attend any review sessions your instructor offers. If not, organize your own study group or review plan. Think through the exam details.
Okay, then test day arrives. What are the key in-the-moment strategies?
First, try to arrive a bit early. Settle yourself, get calm, maybe avoid last-minute panic chatter from classmates.
Good idea. Then what?
Listen for any final oral instructions. Then do a quick scan of the whole test. Get the lay of the land, maybe budget your time.
Smart. Don't just dive into question one.
Right. Read the directions for each section carefully. If it says answer 2 out of 4, don't waste time doing all 4.
Common mistake.
Definitely. Answer questions you feel confident about first to build momentum. Skip tough ones and mark them to come back to later. Sometimes another question can spark your memory.
And always answer everything required, even if you're guessing.
Yes. Partial credit is better than zero. And finally, save a few minutes at the end. Review your answers, check calculations, make sure you didn't miss anything.
Okay, solid test day plan. But what about after the test? Just check the grade and forget it.
No, no. Reviewing your graded test is crucial learning, whether you aced it or not. Fandy's story is great here.
The statistics student.
Yeah, she used to just look at the grade. But reviewing a tough exam with a tutor showed her she was good at calculations, but weak on unexpected essay questions. That changed how she studied next time.
So the test itself is feedback. Keep those materials too.
Absolutely. Keep important notes, tests, papers that can be useful later.
Now let's talk more about test anxiety. It's real, right? Not just in your head.
Oh, it's very real. It can have physical symptoms, feeling sick, sweaty palms, shortness of breath, nausea.
And the mental side.
Your thoughts can spiral, catastrophizing, thinking you'll fail, have to drop out. Mm. It can be intense. The Anxiety and Depression Association of America confirms how common and impactful it is.
But you can manage it.
Yes, absolutely. The number one defense is solid preparation. Knowing you've done the work builds real confidence.
That makes sense. Control what you can control.
Exactly. And then there are in-the-moment techniques. Controlled breathing, visualization, meditation, even just taking a deep breath, closing your eyes for a second, maybe even forcing a little smile can help break the anxiety cycle.
Like feeling confident before a presentation you've practiced.
Precisely. You can bring that same prepared confidence into the exam room.
And these skills, they're not just for college, are they?
Not at all. Test taking is a lifelong skill. Many professions require licensing exams, ongoing certifications. Learning how to manage tests and the associated stress is invaluable.
Which really brings up a key question for everyone listening. How can you use all this, these insights about memory and tests, to really take control of how you approach exams now and in the future?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So wrapping this deep dive up, we've seen that understanding memory, using smart strategies like spacing, interleaving, and practice testing, and approaching tests holistically. These are huge for doing well academically and beyond.
They really are. These are skills you build over time.
And they genuinely work.
And here's a final thought to chew on based on everything we've discussed. If forgetting, that productive forgetting, is actually necessary for strong long-term memory.
Yeah.
And consider this. What common study habits might you have right now that are actually preventing that helpful forgetting and maybe hindering your learning as a result? Could trying too hard to keep everything fresh in your mind all the time be counterproductive?
Wow, that's something to think about. All right, good habits actually bad sometimes. Interesting.
Food for thought.
Well, you definitely have a powerful toolkit now, not just for acing exams, but for really making knowledge stick long term. So go try these strategies out, experiment, and see what works best for your brain.